Thank you all for coming to today's colloquium. We're very lucky to have Mrs. Sharon Cohen with us today to talk about topic sentences. I know it's very close to her heart, and it will hopefully build on some of the larger discussions that we've had so far in this series, and it will also begin a couple of very concrete discussions that we'll have over the next couple of weeks as to just what is a sentence, what is a topic sentence, and so we hope you enjoy it very much. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled to see so many people here. I know that there have been more in the previous colloquia, but it's very nice to see such a good turnout. So thank you, first of all, to Matt Spring and to Deborah Baldwin for putting these writing colloquia together. It's an honor for me to stand up here alongside such illustrious company and represent the UD English Department. It's also very intimidating. Drs. Moran, Waterman Ward, Cowan, and Baldwin have all given very rich and insightful lectures. Though I myself haven't been here to attend them because I normally work in the Writing Center during this time, I've been following them diligently online through the Google Drive. So today, topic sentences. How do I form topic sentences? Admittedly, I have absolutely no memory whatsoever of how or why it came to be that I would be lecturing on this particular topic. I don't know if Matt Spring sprung it on me or if I volunteered for it, but here we are. So topic sentences are not as exciting as introductions, and they're certainly less existential of an issue than trying to make your essays matter or writing as a means of discovery. But they are important. So after 3 years of working in the Writing Center, I've found that most students either never even heard of a topic sentence, or that they really don't know how to write one well. Topic sentences actually span the classical rhetorical tradition of invention, organization, and style. So what you're arguing, in what order, and how. But more on that anon. And interestingly enough, and to complicate the issue a bit further, you'll hear some professors say that they don't even want you to use a topic sentence. They'll say that you don't even need them. Other professors would vehemently disagree and absolutely demand them in your papers. So we truly are a divided nation. But who is right? Well, they both are. As a fellow student myself, I'll let you all in on a secret that I wish someone had told me when I was your age. And that is that part of the job of being a student is figuring out what your professor wants. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is arbitrary and we throw our hands up in the air and we bemoan how unfair life is. No. Every professor will want your essay to be articulate and analytical, to have a strong thesis statement, to be unified and cohesive, to have good grammar, punctuation, diction, etc., etc. But topic sentences, well, those can be kind of up for grabs sometimes. So what I'm planning on doing today is teaching you more about the, quote, like, traditional kinds of topic sentences, how to write one and how they should function in the overall structure of your paper. And we'll look at some sort of do's and don'ts examples. Then I'll go over more, let's call them, non-traditional topic sentences that can also be useful in academic writing. But first, I'd actually like to begin with a thought experiment. So I want all of you to imagine a museum that you've been to. And you can close your eyes here if you want to. You can conjure up the image in your head of the whole museum itself, right? The building, its facade, the grounds, maybe even the street that it's on. And then you go inside the museum, and in most cases, it has rooms to it. And I'm imagining a room in the Dallas Museum of Art, the DMA, and if you've never been there, I highly recommend that you go. And that room has Impressionist paintings in it. But those paintings didn't just spontaneously hang themselves on the walls, right? It's the job of a curator to do that. And a curator is someone who decides which painting goes where, at what height, in what order. And there are reasons behind all of those decisions. In fact, there are interpretive reasons and interpretive decisions. As with museums, so with essays. You are the curator of the museum that is your essay. That is, you get to design, build, and decorate its overall structure. And the rooms, in other words, your paragraphs, make up the parts of that museum of your essay. So what does this have to do with topic sentences? Okay. Well, most museums, in addition to curators, also employ a docent, which is a fancy word for a guide. The docent often leads you from room to room, is knowledgeable about the art, and helps explain things to you. So again, as with museums, so with essays. Not only then are you the curator of your essay, but you are also its docent, and it is your duty to help your reader navigate his or her way through your writing. The topic sentence is the entryway into the room of your paragraph, and you must guide your reader into it well. In fact, we should recall Plato's definition of rhetoric here. Does anyone have that on tap? Plato's definition of rhetoric. I know 1, 2, 3 people in the room who should definitely know the answer to that. Katie? Plato's, the shorter one. I'll start you off. The art? Yeah? By means of words. Was that a team effort there?
Yeah.
All right, good job, guys. Right? So very good. The art of soul leading by means of words. So you are the leader of someone's soul with the words that you write. I mean, stop and really think about that for a second. For however long a time it takes for your professor or your friend or even your beloved to read a piece of your writing, his or her soul is in your hands. It's pretty huge. So ask yourself, what kind of soul leader do you want to be? This is your ethos, right? Do some of you guys remember that term from Dr. Moran's lecture? Oh, God. Ethos? How many of you were at Dr. Moran's lecture? Okay. So your ethos, that's the character that you establish as a writer. Are you going to be the kind of leader that's yanking a soul all over the place? Knocking it into the walls, into the doorframe, tripping over, leaving the poor soul stranded? Or are you going to rise to the challenge of gracefully leading a soul, thank you, from room to room, from paragraph to paragraph of your carefully crafted museum of an essay? I just want you guys to keep that analogy in mind as we kind of get into the nitty-gritty now of topic sentence rules. So, rule number one, know the difference between a topic and a topic sentence. Let me say that again. Know the difference between a topic and a topic sentence. A topic is what a paragraph is about. A topic sentence, it's a complete thought. In other words, it's a predication. So the shield of Achilles in the Iliad, Virgil being damned in the Divine Comedy, the war in heaven and paradise lost, those are all topics. They are not complete thoughts and they are not topic sentences. So here's an example of a topic sentence. Quote, "The war in heaven serves as the paradigmatic example of the difference between obedience and disobedience for Adam." That's a complete thought, and I'll turn back to that in a moment, but for now, I just want you to know the difference between a topic and a topic sentence. Rule number two, make sure that your topic sentence relates back to and supports your thesis statement. Rule number two, make sure that your topic sentence relates back to and supports your thesis statement. Think back upon the introduction that Dr. Moran gave you guys in the first lecture on why Dante, who loves and admires Virgil, also damns him in the Divine Comedy, right? So he has a paper and he's writing about Virgil and he's writing about why Dante, who loves Virgil, also damns him. So pretend that this was the topic sentence of the first paragraph of that essay. Pretend that I wrote this for that essay. Odorici, the illuminator, whom Dante meets in Canto 11, scorns the glory human artists anticipate and informs him that the heavy load they must carry upon their backs, quote, is the penalty exacted from those who there overreached. What's wrong with that as a topic sentence, you think? There's nothing wrong with it per se, but what's wrong with it in the context that I just gave it to you? So I just said that my essay is about Virgil, right? And Dante damning Virgil, and I just gave a quote about Odorici. Do those two things line up together? No. It's a fine sentence. I mean, I wrote it myself, but it has nothing to do with the topic, or it has nothing to do with my thesis statement. I'm talking about Virgil, I'm talking about Dante damning Virgil. What Odorici has to do with that is absolutely nothing. So you always want to make sure that your topic sentences relate back to your thesis and that they support your thesis. So if it doesn't, it's called a non sequitur. It does not follow. It's actually a logical fallacy that you're committing in your paper. So again, make sure that your topic sentence relates back to and supports your thesis statement. Okay, rule number three. A topic sentence is not a public service announcement. So here's what I mean by that. I see this all the time in the writing lab. You laugh, but, quote, in this paragraph, I will discuss the war in heaven and Paradise Lost. Well, all you did there was just give a predication to your topic, and that's cheating. And it's not a topic sentence, that's called stating the obvious. So this brings us now to what a topic sentence is actually supposed to be, which is the main idea of your paragraph. So another way of thinking about that is, if your paragraph, if your body paragraph had a thesis statement to it, the topic sentence would be just that. So here's the same one that I just used before. Quote, the war in heaven serves as the paradigmatic example of the difference between obedience and disobedience for Adam. You know from that sentence exactly what the rest of the paragraph will support. Namely, all the ways in which the war in heaven shows Adam the difference between obedience and disobedience. Any sentence that follows in that paragraph will have to explain and support such a focus. You'll also notice that that sentence is neither too broad nor too narrow. It precisely encapsulates the main idea. Because every time that you have an indentation, every time that you start a new paragraph, it indicates to the reader that there has been a shift in the development of thought. You are creating a new part of your essay. So the first sentence of that new paragraph will not only help remind you of your focus in this particular paragraph, but it will also help your readers know what this particular paragraph is arguing. Again, it's not just a public service announcement of your topic, it's stating the main idea of the paragraph. Which brings me to rule number four, which isn't really so much a rule as it is a litmus test. If you have written a paragraph and you cannot state in a complete sentence summary what the paragraph is about or what it is arguing, then you have a problem. And your problem most likely is that your paragraph is either not unified or not cohesive. In a unified paragraph, every sentence somehow relates to its main idea. And in a cohesive paragraph, there is a relationship between and progression of sentences. So there's an organizing principle, you have transitional words, parallel structures, etc. And in other words, the paragraph flows. So if you have a unified and cohesive paragraph, then you should easily be able to come up with a topic sentence for it. If you can't, then you need to go back to the paragraph and figure out why. So theoretically, if I went back and reread all of the topic sentences of your essay, then not only would they all relate back to and support your thesis, but I would be able to distinguish between all of your main points and see how your essay as a whole would be unified and cohesive. So it's looking at your paragraphs on the grand scale. So now that we've reviewed these rules and hopefully understand how to write a strong topic sentence and how it should function in your essay, I want to just go over the handout that I have with you. So the first handout is the one with the line in between it. There are three examples on the top and three on the bottom. So there's no and there's yes. For the record, all the yeses come from an article that my colleague and friend Christopher Schmidt wrote for Ramify, which is the Graduate Student Journal. And it's from an essay on Milton called Matters Hid, Demonic Possession, and Milton's Sons of God. And I did get his permission to use it. So I have his yeses here, and then I wrote noes. I wrote those because admittedly, they're parodies, but actually a lot of students do this, so it's actually pretty legitimate. So let's start looking at these. These get increasingly more complex as we go along. So number one, no. Don't do this as a topic sentence. Thou wert lost, not I. This is what I call just plopping down a quote as a topic sentence, and I need to divine from your essay exactly what that quote is doing there, how it's important, what you're doing with it, why you've just basically plopped a quote down with absolutely no context. That should not happen. So here's an example of a yes. In fact, Adam and Eve, both before and after their fall, blame anyone on hand for their weaknesses and mistakes. So that quote, that would actually support the main point that Mr. Schmidt was making in his essay there, right? But it would come after the topic sentence that has just given me the main idea of that paragraph, which is basically Adam and Eve blaming everyone but themselves, right? Number two, no, Adam has a prophetic vision of the sons of God in book 11. Do any of you, if you were a teacher or if you were peer editing your friend's essay, what would you tell somebody who wrote that sentence? That's an example of what? Does anyone know? Exactly, very good. It's plot summary, right? Well, thank you. I've read Paradise Lost too, and I don't need you to summarize the book for me. So instead of just giving me an example of plot summary, you're gonna tell me why that episode that you've summarized is important or what attention I should be giving to it. And here Chris put it in terms of a question. So he wrote, why then does Adam's prophetic vision in book 11 represent the sons of God as human sons of Seth rather than as angelic beings? Right? So instead of just telling me that Adam had a prophetic vision in book 11, which I don't know what your idea is, instead you're telling me that there's something going on in this prophetic vision, namely that Milton chose to present them as human sons rather than as angelic beings, right? And the rest of the paragraph now is going to answer that question. So that's an example of a question being used as a topic sentence. So finally, let's look at the third one. This one is definitely a little more complicated. So the no example. A lot of critics talk about this issue in Paradise Lost. Well, also, you guys have a habit of using a lot quite a bit. A lot is definitely where you put the car. And there are many, many, plenty, sundry of other terms that you can use instead of a lot. But what would you say if you came across this as a topic sentence? A lot of critics talk about this issue in Paradise Lost. What would you say about that kind of a sentence? Is it specific? Yeah, it's a big overgeneralization, right? Well, a lot of critics are talking about an issue in Paradise Lost. Do I know which critics? Do I know what the issue is? Do I know anything about it other than some critics are talking about it? No, right? So let's look at the yes example instead. And we'll break this down because it is a complex sentence. It's actually technically a compound sentence, but it's complex in its nature. So biblical commentators have differed as to the precise identities of the sons of God and daughters of men. So right there, the biblical commentators, not just critics, right? They're not critics of science or critics of Conrad, right? These are biblical commentators, right? And they're differing as to the identities of the sons of God and daughters of men. So right there, he identified the exact problem, right? And their divergent interpretations of these titles have had significant, do I have significant or significance on there? Significant, okay, I corrected it. Have had significant consequences for their understanding of who is most to blame for the flood. And there he just refined the issue a little bit more. So how these biblical commentators have an interpretation of whichever title, it's going to affect who they understand to be most to blame for the flood. And then within this paragraph, there's going to be a fuller explanation as to these divergent interpretations. But this topic sentence encapsulates that whole issue, and it's not vague. Does that make sense for all three of those examples? Okay. So let's go underneath the line. So to show my own humility here, these are three topic sentences that I wrote. And they are from an essay that I wrote on Willa Cather from a book that she wrote called Shadows on the Rock. Has anybody here ever read that book? Okay, good. I was hoping that you wouldn't. So I chose these sentences from a book that you have never read because I want to show you that a good topic sentence, hopefully a good topic sentence, you don't need to know even the rest of the book just to know exactly what's going to follow in a topic sentence. These are the more, let's call them kind of non-traditional topic sentences because they'll, instead of just stating the main idea as Mr. Schmitz do in these examples, they're a little bit different than that. So I'll show you how each one is functioning. So number one, in the novel De Mobla, Willa Cather famously exclaims, quote, how wonderful it would be if we could throw all the furniture out the window. Now you might be saying, oh, wait a minute here, Mrs. Cohen, you just said in number one that I'm not supposed to use a quote at all, right? But this is actually different, because here, first of all, I didn't just plop the quote down. I didn't just say how wonderful it would be if we could throw all the furniture out the window. That would be very random, right? I'm telling you the article that it came from, and I'm telling you the author who said it. And the way that I'm using this quote is that it's going to be a springboard for everything that's going to come in the rest of the paragraph. I'm going to explain what Cather means by that quote. I'm going to say how it's relevant to the novel that I'm going to be studying. So I'm using that as a sort of launching pad. It's not necessarily a main idea, but it's being used as sort of a springboard into the rest of the paragraph. Number two. So this is, you'll notice, it's two paragraphs here. The bold sentence is the topic sentence. So I'm going from one paragraph to another. So I'll read that one. Young and distinctly Canadian Cecile takes in the beauty of the old Count's art objects, thereby cultivating a sense of aesthetic appreciation. And so, as she later understands the necessity for tools with which one makes life itself after her visit at the Harnois house, she also understands here that the kind objects about one need to include the old world's enduring objects. For that reason precisely, Cecile will become the owner of the glass fruit, and accordingly, the exoticism of the Count's old order will join into the order and regularity of the Eau Claire home. The dying Count entrusts its transference to Euclid, and so on and so forth. So what you'll notice here is this is what's maybe called a transitional topic sentence. I am going from the idea that I ended in one paragraph there, and I'm actually developing a new thought, but I'm using it to transition, right? So that's why I have for that reason precisely. It's not an entirely new main idea that's going on in this new paragraph. So you can use a transition to go from one sentence to another when you're transitioning between paragraphs. It just depends on what you're trying to accomplish in your paragraph. So this is an example of a transitional paragraph. Let's look at the third one. So the bold one again, you'll notice three or four sentences in, that's my topic sentence. The three art objects of Shadows on the Rock that we have considered in this essay, Cecile's cup, Jacques' toy beaver, and Count Frontenac's glass fruit, were all established to be part of, quote, the complexion, the special flavor, the special happiness of each day in the novel. Cather imbued them with a sense of wonder and meaning that brought her characters closer to each other and even to the divine. But there is something else that they also strikingly share in common. They were all gifts. This idea of the art object as a gift, namely an immutable item that can last forever that we can give to something else, is something that Cather believes to be nothing short of an actual miracle, and so on and so on. So there, my topic sentence is actually in the middle of the paragraph. It's not in the beginning. Because what I needed to do in those preceding sentences was summarize the background and then provide transition. So all the sentences that will follow after that bold sentence are going to support and follow my new focus of the art object as a gift. But I needed to have those preceding sentences there. So you can have a topic sentence in the middle of a paragraph, right? Again, it just depends on what's going on in your paragraph. So if you have professors who say, no, I want the main idea, first sentence, every paragraph, well, that's what you have to do. But if you have professors who are open to more different kinds of topic sentences, well, this would be different kinds of examples that you could use in your own writing. As Dr. Kreider likes to say, variety pleases, right? So that's always a really good mantra to know. If you always have the main idea as your topic sentence, try out different kinds of topic sentences. Try putting it at the end. If you have a topic sentence that might shock somebody, let's say you have a hostile audience, you could even put it at the end of the paragraph because you want to lead to an unexpected conclusion, and by laying out your ideas first, the reader might find them to be more reasonable by the time they get to the end of the paragraph. So those are these examples. I'll go over one more set of examples, and then I think we'll have some time for questions if you guys have any.
Can I just ask a question on the last example?
Yes.
If you do have a point last...
Do you mean number three here? Yes.
If you wait till the end of the paragraph, is there anything that you should do? Do you still want to have a topic sentence? What do you do at the beginning of that?
I would just have a logical chain of your sentences that would ultimately lead to the final conclusion that you're making that would be the topic sentence there. It shouldn't be that the sentences that all precede it you have no clue what the person is talking about. There should be some element of topic in those sentences, but the main point that you're going to make, essentially the argument of that paragraph, it would just come at the end.
Because I'm just not saying that we have license to summarize.
No.
Here's some quotes in, and then to say what we're doing with them.
No.
We're still going to be directing our reader.
Yes.
But it's sneaky because it's not the real point.
Exactly.
It's the fake point.
Yeah, and these are let's say far more rare. The opportunity when you would have such a shocking statement to say to your professor that it could only come at the end of the paragraph because you need to warm them up to it. So this is you're at a very high level of writing. So before you feel comfortable with those kinds of topic sentences, definitely practice maybe having them in the beginning or in the middle. So I have here on the second handout, this is from Dr. Kreider's Office of Assertion, a book some of you are very familiar with. And it comes from the appendix, an essay that Tommy Hain, did I pronounce that correctly? Hain? Wrote for Dr. Kreider, and it's about basically Telemachus's maturation into a man, ready to rule the household. And you'll see here on the upper left paragraph that the final sentence there, which is quite long, it begins with Telemachus's maturation. That's the thesis statement of this essay. And it's a complicated thesis statement because it's twofold. Essentially, there are two arguments going on in it. So I'll go ahead and read that one aloud. Telemachus's maturation, through supernatural and human influence into a man capable of acting as he ought to, is essential to the restoration of the Odyssean household and regime because, once matured, Telemachus is able to help Odysseus forcibly get rid of the suitors, and also because Telemachus, unlike Hamlet, becomes a viable heir who will maintain the same high standards set by Laertes and Odysseus. So that's his thesis statement. Let's do a check. Does his topic sentence that will follow in the next body paragraph there, let's see if that supports such a thesis statement. Okay, so I'm reading where the number two there is. Telemachus's primary action in the Odyssey is in maturing from a child to a man, from one who is incapable of acting as he should to one who is capable. Would you guys agree or disagree that that statement, that that topic sentence supports the thesis statement that Mr. Hein wrote?
Agree.
Yeah, I would agree too, right? And then, before you even read any further in that paragraph there, what do you think this paragraph is going to be about? What do you think the paragraph will be about?
Maturation.
Yeah, exactly. Telemachus's maturation. You'll notice right there that in the next sentence it says, at the start of the epic. Right? So he's going to be tracing the primary action that happens in the epic. Let's go to number three there, and I'll read that topic sentence. Yet, even with the first appearance of Athene, Telemachus is far from becoming a man. He still acts childishly and requires further assistance to mature. Agree or disagree that this supports our thesis statement? Agree. So what do you think that will follow in this paragraph? Based on this topic sentence, what do you think will follow in the paragraph? Yeah.
About how he still has stuff to learn, or how he actually does.
Well, you nailed it. That's actually the two things that will follow exactly in this paragraph. So you'll find out if you buy the book. So, but that's exactly right. So that you should be able to see from your topic sentence, the reader could have nothing else there, but I should be able to see in your topic sentence exactly what will be in the rest of the paragraph. So what I often tell my students is that, or if you come to the writing lab, one way that I recommend that you work on an outline is that you write the topic sentence of your body paragraphs. If you're working on an outline, some people hate outlines, some people love them. If you do work with outlines, you'll have your thesis, and then for each body paragraph, just write out a topic sentence, because it'll A, help you keep your focus and help you keep track of your arguments. Okay? So hopefully those were helpful examples. And I suggested earlier that topic sentences are part of the classical tradition, rhetorical tradition, of invention, organization, and style. So you need to determine what it is that you're arguing in your paragraph. That's invention. You need to determine in what order you're going to argue it. That's the organization that begins with your topic sentence. And you need to determine how you're going to say it. And that's using good style, of course, with strong diction, grammar, and punctuation. You'll need to figure out whether a simple compound complex or compound complex sentence would be the best fit. And I don't want to say more about that because Mrs. Niebuhr will be picking up that topic next week in her lecture. So I hope that you will all go forth and write beautiful and meaty topic sentences from here on out. Thank you. So we do have time for some questions, if you have questions. Anyone? No, Mr. Spring.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful, clear, concise. You had a great transition yourself between points. And I love the imagery, too, of the museum. It really was helpful.
Thank you.
To have that imagery for the art that you are creating in your essay. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about all the parts of the topic sentence, right? Because you mentioned mm-hmm. it, and you can see it in these topic sentences as well, because there's evidence that the writer is able to refer back to the previous point that was made,
mm-hmm.
that the writer was able to refer back to the thesis,
right?
And the writer was able to contain the topic sentence for that paragraph in one very concise, briefly written sentence. How do you include all of those things in one sentence without having to have a 14-line sentence?
Yeah, I think actually the examples that Mr. Schmidt gave, so the first one, number one there, I think that's a perfect topic sentence, and it's very simple. So it says, in fact, Adam and Eve, both before and after their fall, blame anyone on hand for their weaknesses and mistakes. That's far more simple than the more complicated ones I used at the end there, but this is a perfect topic sentence. If you're looking for two things, A, the main idea, well, I know the main idea here, it's Adam and Eve blaming everybody but themselves, because that's putting forth an argument. It's not just saying, Adam and Eve both fell, right? It's making a point about their fall, one aspect of it, which is the blame that they have on everyone on hand for their weaknesses and mistakes. Second of all, I don't have Mr. Schmidt's thesis statement here because it's actually quite complicated. So that's why I wanted to use Mr. Hines' essay. He writes a very sort of exploratory kind of introduction where the thesis isn't explicitly stated as in Mr. Hines' essay. So that's why I didn't include it here. But it certainly does support what it is he's exploring in his essay. So I think for a better example of how that can be done, you can see how Mr. Hines supports his thesis. Does that answer your question? Yeah. Yes, Dr. Baldwin.
I also love the image of the art because this is the idea behind traveling shows, mm-hmm. that they take individual paintings and they reorganize them depending on the traveling exhibit,
yep.
which is exactly what's happening in these papers. That for, and so this is kind of more of a comment, I just want to make two comments from the professor's side. One, to you, when you're writing papers, the quotation views might seem really obvious that they're supporting your point. Why? Because you're thinking about your point. And what you don't see is that often the other people using the same quotations are writing a different paper. And it's really obvious to them that they have a different art show that's traveling around the country very, under a very different title. And so it's really helpful for your reader if you tell them, you know, what's the room that you're about to enter into? Because otherwise they're going to be looking at their quotes and going, great art, eh? What do you think?
Right.
They're going to be having their experience. They're very different without any warning of what they're walking into. So it's a great comment. And then the other thing I just want to mention is that others who are grading great papers probably have the same experience. The buried topic sentence. You mentioned the topic sentence at the beginning. Topic sentence is at the end. Okay, stress division. That's where, you know, that's what we're left with. That's usually important. It's the ones in the middle to get buried and lost.
Yeah. And I just want to make a distinction there where Dr. Baldwin is talking about one that is buried and lost versus this kind here, which is actually supposed to be in the middle. That's like sometimes you'll go to the writing lab and the writing lab tutor will say, oh, your thesis, it's actually in your conclusion. Look, let's now just move it to the introduction here. It's the same concept with the buried topic sentence where the main point that you've actually, that you're trying to make, it took just a lot of work for you to get to it, and it should have been in the front. So if you have to remember, the main point of the paragraph should come before, so the reader knows what the main point of the paragraph is. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, yeah. That's very helpful. Which is that even in that example, though, you might want to have a topic sentence that just sort of points back to that one in the middle, even if it's artfully put in the middle, just because there are readers who go through and read the topic sentences just to see what's going on in the paper. Like, is it going to be on page 6, on page 7, on page 8? Then you know it's going to be a paper with the drive-through. Right? And you go, okay, see that. But if you go through and you see that there really are topic sentences,
right,
that shows that the student's going somewhere.
So you're learning a lot. If you ever have Dr. Baldwin, where should you put your topic sentence? In the beginning. Very good. So this is a strategic meeting as well. So any other questions? Dr. Kreider.
I had a question as a writer, not as a creator.
Yes.
When I'm writing longer pieces, I find that I have these monster paragraphs.
Yeah.
And they really do all fit around a topic sentence, even if I don't actually have a topic sentence in there. But then I think about the conventions of paragraphing, which tell me I'm not supposed to have a three-page paragraph. And so then I think, okay, so I need to split up my, let's say, my examples. Maybe
yeah.
I have two examples, so it's going to be a two-paragraph part. But then, so I've got a topic sentence at that point, and as a writer, I'm always stuck. So do I repeat? Do I repeat the topic sentence so it now governs the second, which sometimes seems slightly insulting to me.
Sure.
Or do I just let it go, and then I don't have a topic sentence for the paragraph, I have one for the part.
Yeah.
And I'm especially noticing that editors now more and more under the influence of journalism.
They want the shorter, yeah.
I think even as academics, we tend to prefer shorter paragraphing now than maybe even just 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And so, you know, right, tweet long enough, we'll all just have one
sentence.
But I'm
just cover your ears.
Write that advice as a writer.
Yeah.
When I do that, what should I do? Or when I come to that situation, what should I do? It's a genuine question.
No, I know it is. The first piece of advice I would give is whatever the editor wants, just do it. So don't be a stick about, you know, having your long paragraph if they're just telling you to break it up. So if there's a force behind it, just do what the force says. And actually, I'm really glad you asked that, and I can show you by way of example, because Mr. Schmidt actually does that in his own essay, if you wanted to revisit it, because he goes over the various allusions, and he does it very beautifully, because he'll have that main topic sentence for the first one, and then he doesn't, you know, regurgitate it like the reader's an idiot and forgot what happened, but what he does is he just uses a simple transition, like the second example, or another example of the topic again, and that will just take care of it. So that way it actually, I in that situation, I would actually have had the shorter paragraphs to break up the example ideas, but a simpler set of transitions I think will take care of it, especially if in the previous or penultimate paragraph the idea was just visited. Is that helpful? Or
it is.
Yeah.
That sounds like very good advice.
Yeah.
it makes me wonder if one doesn't have to moderate the freshman topic sentence understanding when you get to a 15-page American history.
Of course.
Especially if you're talking about senior novel presentation or philosophy.
Right. Because I think that just as you mature as a writer and as the paragraphs will grow in size by the sheer amount, you'll just understand and learn the different kinds of paragraphs that you're going to have. So. And you'll learn how to write better topic sentences for those kinds of paragraphs.
Thank you very much for the advice.
Yes?
Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes.
So on the second half of the page, number
one. Which page are you looking at?
I'm sorry, the one with the...
Yes, got it.
You said it was a springboard?
Yes.
Okay, would it confuse the reader to use a topic sentence like that and then use one in the first half of the page? That reminds the reader of the thesis. Like, would it be?
You mean like further within the paragraph?
No, like another paragraph. So one paragraph topic sentence I'm using.
Sorry, guys, I can't hear her. Could you give me 1 sec? Thanks.
The second half. Okay, so number one on the second half.
Yes.
I use that in one paragraph as a topic sentence, and then on another paragraph I use number one from the first part. Would that confuse the reader? Should I stick to? One?
I see. So you're saying. You I would say for number one, for the first part, you never want to do this in any shape or form. You never want to just plop a quote down with just the quotation marks and then a period. I can't think of any situation where that would be acceptable.
No, I'm talking about where it says yes.
Underneath it.
Right.
Oh, I see. So what would happen there is that that quote, which would have supported that topic sentence, would come afterwards.
Right.
I'm sorry, I think I'm not understanding your question.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, so those are two examples of topic sentences, right? Well, like the number one,
yes.
The second part, and then we're under yes, that's another, right?
Yeah.
So if I wanted to use those as like a template, I guess, could I use them, should I stick to one in an essay, or could I vary them?
Oh, no, of course, you could vary them.
And would it confuse the reader?
No. I'm sorry, I understand now, I apologize. No, these are just different kinds that I wanted to give you, again, in the sense of variety pleases, right? So if you have the kind of sentence, like for example, in number one on the bottom there, that's what I needed for my specific topic sentence for that particular paragraph, because I needed to talk about what she means by that, and I needed this sentence to launch me into that discussion, right? But let's say I'm using kind of paragraph here where I just need to make a point about something and I don't need the quote right away, well then I'll just have it afterwards. So mixing it up depending on what you're trying to accomplish in a paragraph is perfectly acceptable. Yeah. I apologize that I got confused there. Okay. All right, I think we're out of time. Oh no.
It reminded me of Dr. Waterman's work structure on connectors.
Oh, yeah.
And the use of a well-placed connector shows a lot of great. That was her point, that these little words are actually this wonderful gift that tells you structure. And that's what I think topic sentences are doing. It's giving you a sense of the structure when you're playing. So if you have just put nevertheless or something, then that kind of contrast might be what you were talking about in part about how to break it up without giving a whole new topic sentence. But just showing that there's been a logical shift that is helpful for the reader.
Thank you. Thanks, guys, for coming.